Welcome to Politico Money. I'm Ben White. And while we're still practicing social distancing, Politico in-person events are canceled, but we're still doing events. So today I'm joined over Zoom by Senator Ben Cardin. Senator Cardin is ranking Democrat on the Small Business Committee, and we're talking about the struggling Paycheck Protection Program, what he thinks the next round of stimulus funding has got to include to keep small businesses and local and state economies afloat, and the return of senators to the Capitol despite concerns about the spread of the coronavirus.
Senator Cardin, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, Ben, it's good to be with you, and thank you to Politico for making this opportunity available.
Yeah, we're happy to have you join us. Tell us first quickly how you feel about the Senate being back in session. Obviously, the House not back yet. Worried a little bit about the status of the coronavirus in Washington and the caseloads and the idea that it hasn't hit the peak yet. Are you glad to be back? Do you feel safe? Do you think the conditions are right for the Senate right now to be back in Washington in session?
Well, clearly the Senate has a lot of work to do, but unfortunately we've come back and we have not yet done any COVID-19 related activities. It's been some nominations. For that, we didn't need to come back this week. We do need to be here, though, in order to deal with the COVID-19, with the healthcare pandemic and the economic consequences. And I hope that we will see oversight done by our committees. The Small Business Committee needs to have a public hearing in order to oversight how the program is working. So we're trying to make sure that we get those scheduled. So far it's been a slow start from the point of view of what we're doing on the pandemic. As far as staying safe, you know, obviously when the Senate comes back into session, there's a lot of support staff that needs to be here. To me, we have to be very cautious and follow public health recommendations, make sure that we distance and make sure that we take precautions.
Okay, what about this question of rapid testing for, you know, senators and staff? A big debate about that. You know, Senator McConnell and the House Speaker basically said, no, we don't want to get these rapid tests before everybody else does. Wouldn't be fair to privileged members of Congress over that. Others arguing that, you know, absolutely, you guys should have the rapid tests. So we don't want our lawmakers to be at risk here when they have important business to do, as you mentioned. What's your feeling on that?
The testing capacity is so far below what we need in this country. I know that the Congress should not be in a preferred status. We should have testing available if the protocols call for it. But at this particular moment, there's no protocol that would require that. So I think the leaders made the right decision. But I do urge our country and our leaders to take more aggressive action to make sure we have testing capacity in all communities. We're going to be reopening businesses, and they need to have testing capacity. We need to know that workplaces are safe. We need to know where the virus is spreading.
Right. We can talk a little bit more about testing as we go on, but I want to focus on your one main area of focus here, which is small business as the ranking member on the committee and the Paycheck Protection Program, which has doled out a significant amount of money, but as we know, has had a lot of technical problems and some problems with, you know, who's getting the loans and the size of the loans and which banks are able to access the SBA system. So I want to give a shout out to Zach Warmbrode here from Politico, who is the resident scholar and master of all things PPP and certainly helped me with these questions. So I don't want to pretend that I've come up with them all on my own, which I never do. But the first one is, does PPP need more funding? And if so, exactly how much in your mind?
Well, let me thank Zach for helping you. It's going to need more money. It's clear to me that we will run out of this most recent replenishment of funds. $310 billion were replenished. There's still over $100 billion in the PPP program, so they're still processing these loans. It's a very popular program. We wanted to get this money out quickly, and the money is getting out quickly. In fairness to the Small Business Administration, this was a brand new program. Hundreds of billions of dollars, millions of applications for these forgivable loans. So it has been a challenge, as any new program would be a challenge. But money has gotten out there. We've already seen over $500 billion of loans under the PPP program. So the program is working. Question is, who's getting the relief?
Yeah.
The underserved community getting their fair share, particularly those that are underbanked. And that's one of the issues we really need to look at.
Okay, and then in terms of a dollar figure, I mean, I know I've seen banks and others refer to this $1 trillion total number as kind of the realm of need for small businesses. I think we're at, you know, 670 that's been authorized. Does that 1 trillion sound right to you, what we need to get to, or is it more than that?
Well, I don't know, because we don't have the numbers. So one of the major shortcomings is that the SBA has not provided Congress and the American people with the specific information as to what industries are getting the funds, what size businesses are getting the fund, how much more money is needed, how has the nonprofit community come into this program, what's going on in regards to the special NIC code 72, which are our restaurants and our hotels. Right. We need to have that type of information. Where are the loans geographically being given? So yes, we expect more is needed, but they haven't given us a good estimate as to how much more is needed, and to make sure that we reach the hard to serve small businesses that don't have traditional relations with banking institutions.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to ask you about that. Obviously, I'm certainly interested in seeing lists of recipients of this money, and certainly not to shame anyone for applying for it and getting it. This is important. Small businesses need it to keep people on payrolls and to prevent further economic damage. But it does seem like, you know, the size of this program, it's bigger than TARP was during the financial crisis. Now, it would be useful to make sure that, you know, there aren't abuses going on. There are companies getting the money that shouldn't be. We obviously saw some larger businesses, you know, like the Lakers and Shake Shack and Ruth's Chris and the rest, you know, receive the money and then have it disclosed that they'd received it and return it. I know you're working with Senator Rubio on this issue, but can you give us an update on when we might expect to be able to see a list of names of companies that are receiving relief?
Well, we tried to do that yesterday on the floor of the United States Senate. I've introduced legislation with Senator Shaheen and Senator Schumer that would require the SBA to make daily information available. Senator Rubio was on the floor. He doesn't disagree with what we're trying to do. He's as frustrated as we are. He wants that information to be made available. Today, we will have a conversation with Administrator Carranza of the SBA to try to get that information. So we want to see it. I know that the Trump administration has also said that they want to have more transparency on who's gotten these loans. So I'm afraid we're going to have to legislate this, but I would hope that we would get the cooperation of the agencies and this information would be made available. By the way, there's a second program, which is the EIDL program, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan and Grant Program, that we also need to have more transparency. Right now, that program has been very slow in giving the grants out and loans out. And we need to expedite that program. Congress provided $70 billion for that program, which leverages over $300 billion of loans as well as grants.
Right. Just tell me, when you asked the SBA this question, why they're not able to just sort of immediately release that information, what is the answer that you're given? Is it just that it's too difficult to compile at the speed with which the money is going out? Why, obviously, you mentioned needing to do it legislatively. It would seem to me this is something that can be done simply by the SBA agreeing to do it. What's the answer you get when you ask?
Well, literally overnight, Congress made the SBA responsible for programs that dramatically increased the size of its tools that were available to help small businesses. To set up a new program of over $600 billion now, it's not easy.
Yeah.
And to expand the EIDL program the way we did, it was not easy. We provided additional resources. We provided for self-certification by the borrower. So we try to make it easier for the Small Business Administration, but quite frankly, they've been overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. We really have not made a priority getting that information out to us. We want them to make that a priority. We recognize they're doing a lot of new things, but they must make this information available. We can't modify this program without knowing how the funds were allocated. There have been many requests that we make it easier for businesses in using the PPP funds. There have been many requests that we expand the eligibility of the PPP program. There's been many requests that said that there are still small businesses that are going to be hurting after the funds are exhausted. What are we going to do for those that are in need, and how will we determine those in need? Well, without having the information, it's very difficult for us to design that type of relief.
Yeah, and when do you think this current tranche of money is going to run out? It seems to last a little bit longer than I expected it to. When are we going to run dry?
Well, I do expect it'll be a matter of days, not weeks, when they run out. I don't know, because we don't know the information as to who's still right. waiting in line or businesses want to apply. We do know that. We also know that this provides, a PPP program provides 8 weeks of relief. We know that many businesses are still going to be in desperate shape after 8 weeks. We do recognize there are target groups that we have to do a better job, the very small businesses, those that have seen dramatic reductions in revenues, and those that are traditionally in the underserved community. Yep. So we need to be able to figure out a way to get that type of help to those businesses.
Right. All right. We'll talk about other potential changes to PPP. A lot of the questions that came in, I think, were from small business proprietors, particularly in the restaurant industry. What other changes do you need to make, like easing the loan forgiveness requirements that restaurants and other businesses say are too rigid? And there's the complaint that it requires them to spend too much on payroll in too short a period of time. Should that be loosened up, the restrictions on how much needs to be used on payroll in order to get forgiveness? Specifically, what do you see as changes that are needed in the structure of the program?
And as I've said several times, let's get all the information before we make judgment. And that's really critical, that we get the data. But clearly, when we conceived the program, we thought that businesses would be able to be up and running after 8 weeks. That's not going to be the case. We know now that it's unlikely. If you're a restaurant that's in a community where you are, where the governor has ordered the businesses to stay closed, that it's unlikely you can get up to full operations within that 8 week period. And then if you are operating, we now have social distancing, which means you're going to have fewer customers than you've had before. So we recognize that we're going to have to give greater discretion on when we expect businesses to be up and up running and be able to bring back their full payroll in a productive way. So looking at that 8 week period, looking at the a little more flexibility in that, and when that 8 week period starts and ends, and when you need to bring your full workforce back in order to get maximum forgiveness, is certainly something that we need to take a look at and provide, I think, greater relief to those businesses that cannot be at full operations. So that's one area I think Democrats and Republicans recognize that we need to take a look at, and we want to provide additional help to small businesses.
Okay, and are you and Senator Rubio pretty much on the same page here in terms of the changes in the structure of the program and giving businesses a little bit more flexibility on how to use the money?
I think we are. I think we've worked very well together. I expect we will continue to listen to each other. One of the good things about this program, it was truly bipartisan. We worked together and listened to each other, and we made changes based upon listening. And I think we'll do the same thing again. And I think we're willing to make sure that we have a bipartisan recommendation to the full Senate and the full Congress as to how we can improve the program.
Okay. So, and tell me how legislatively you see this coming together. Is this a standalone piece of legislation to make changes to PPP, or part of whatever emerges as the next relief package for the coronavirus? Or do you have to do it on its own, or is it part of a larger package?
Well, some of the modifications can be made administratively. So we will be making those recommendations and have made those recommendations. And there's been some positive action by this administration to try to deal with some modifications through administrative change. Where you need legislative change, I think it's most likely it'll be in the next stimulus package, or we call it the COVID-4. We've had three major stimulus packages. The third, CARES Act, was modified with the legislation that was passed about 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago.
All right, well, let's talk about that. Go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted you.
I expect that there will be another package put together, and I know that if you look at how these packages have come about, it looks likely that the package will start in the House of Representatives, since the CARES Act started in the United States Senate. So there's been conversations I've had with my counterparts in the House as to how we can work together to make sure that we have agreement as much as possible going into the small business provisions that might be considered in the next round. So those discussions are taking place.
Okay, well, let's talk about that next round. Obviously, Speaker Pelosi has indicated that she wants to move first, as you mentioned, put together a large relief package that's probably going to include things that the Senate Republicans won't accept, but at least wants to, you know, begin the process on Democratic terms, which would include a lot of aid for state and local governments. What are your top priorities for what needs to go into that next Corona relief package, COVID-4, as you call it, and what size of a bill are we talking about? I mean, we've spent $3 trillion, which is a lot, but this is a massive crisis of unprecedented proportion. So what needs to be in COVID-4?
So let me just remind everyone that the CARES Act started on a partisan line by Senator McConnell bringing out a bill without negotiating with the Democrats. That was unfortunate, and it caused us a delay. And ultimately, we did work together, Democrats and Republicans, and we produced a stronger bill. He also tried to modify the CARES Act, again, on a partisan basis. Again, we had to object, and ultimately, we got a much fairer bipartisan product that helped the underserved community. I say that because the Republicans complaining about Speaker Pelosi is somewhat disingenuous because the way they proceeded, at least initially. We hope that Speaker Pelosi will reach out to not only the Republicans, but to the Senate and try to bring about a package that can pass and be signed by the president. That's what we need to do. We get a stronger package when we work in a bipartisan manner. And I have confidence that the speaker will work in that regard. Clearly, we have to deal with state and local government. That was left out of the revision of the CARES Act. And if state and local governments cannot provide the resources to help our first responders, to deal with the healthcare needs and in the Medicaid program, to deal with the basic services of government, we're not going to get this coronavirus under control. So state and local governments are in desperate need. We have not yet provided relief to the smaller units of local government, and we haven't provided relief for revenue loss. So those are areas that clearly need to be dealt with.
Right. And what do you,
we've also talked.
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
To say I was going to go on to the nutrition programs, the SNAP program, those types of issues clearly were brought up. We didn't deal with it in the CARES Act as effectively as we need to. There's additional areas that we're going to have to deal with on the social side with vulnerable populations. And then, yes, the economic issues are going to have to be addressed.
Okay. When you hear the president and Senator McConnell talk about state and local aid, I mean, McConnell obviously initially brought up the idea of state bankruptcy, kind of backed off and said, that's not actually what I'm recommending. It just should be an option for states. And President Trump has this idea that we shouldn't bail out poorly performing states and have them subsidized by other states. And you know, wants to include provisions that would make sure that, you know, state pension funds aren't bailed out by any provisions for state and local government. What's your response to the hesitancy on the part of some Republicans to provide that aid?
This is not a bailout. This is to allow government to perform essential services that the people of this country need in order to combat COVID-19 and to get our economy back on track and to keep people safe. It's not a bailout. State and local governments need to have balanced budgets. You already mentioned the 20% unemployment number. Think what's going to happen to their income tax revenues.
Right.
We also know that the hospitality industry has been pretty much shut down. State and local government rely on revenues through the tourism and hospitality areas that fund a good part of their local services. We need to make sure that the police protection and fire protection and emergency medical protection is in our community to deal with COVID-19. We have to make sure that the Medicaid program remains strong because that's the first line of defense in regards to our healthcare needs. And if you don't allow state and local governments to provide those essential services, it will fall back on the federal government. It will fall back on our country. So this is a matter of not bailing out a state or a local government. It's to allow them to be our partners in fighting COVID-19 so that we can deal with the health pandemic and get our economy back on track.
Yeah. Okay. We got to let you go in a minute or two here. So I just want to hit you with a couple of quick ones before we let you go. One is timing on COVID-4. I mean, it seems like it's a pretty urgent issue. We're going to get the jobs number Friday. That's going to be awful. And the 20% perhaps unemployment and 20 million plus jobs lost. House is not even back yet. It's going to take a while to put this thing together. How fast can you move? And do you think that jobs report on Friday is going to kind of light a fire under people to say, man, this is awful. We need to do more.
As you know, we put together the CARES Act in a matter of days. And that was one of the largest, it was the largest stimulus package ever passed by the Congress. I hope that we can start working on the next round now, and that within a matter of days, certainly no longer than a week or two, we can have the framework and hopefully the path forward to pass the next stimulus package. I think we got to get working on it immediately.
Okay. And lastly, on the reopening process that is going on right now, we've had some reporting in Politico how states are actually moving faster than the Trump administration guidelines on what needs to be achieved before you reopen the 14 days of declining cases. So it feels to me like we're just kind of reopening and hoping for the best and accepting that there are going to be more COVID cases and perhaps an increase in COVID-related deaths. Plenty of the models show that. Are we doing this right or are we making a mistake?
Well, two things about this. First, and when reopening, we really need to follow the public health experts' recommendations as to the best way to control the spread of this virus. And then we have to make it clear as we reopen, we have to do it in a way that the public health officials tell us to do this with social distancing. It's not going to be reopened and everybody getting together as they did before COVID-19. So we've seen already in some states that have started to reopen that the instructions are not being followed. So clearly follow the public health experts' recommendations on reopening. And secondly, let's make sure we do this in a safe manner.
Yeah. I mean, do you worry about a snapback in the number of cases and a reemergence of this in summer and fall that could just put us back in the hole we were in March?
Absolutely. That's a risk factor. Our public health people are telling us that. That would be the worst thing we can do, not only for the public health risk, but also for our economy.
Right. All right. Senator Ben Cardin, very kind of you to join us. We hope you stay safe in Washington as the Senate returns and the House to follow. Plenty of work for you to do. Thanks, everyone, for watching on the live stream. A reminder that we're doing briefings all across Politico, all areas. You can look at Politico Live to find out about those events. And if you're not a Morning Money subscriber, you should be. As I always say at the end of these, you can go to politico.com/morningmoney and sign up for it and find out everything you need to know about the intersection of Wall Street and Washington there. Senator Ben Cardin, thank you for joining us at a busy moment.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Have a terrific rest of your day. Stay safe.
All right, that's our show. I'm Ben White. My thanks to Senator Ben Cardin for joining me. Our producer is Annie Reese. Jenny Ament is our senior producer, and Irene Noguchi is our executive producer. Subscribe to Politico Money wherever you're listening. You can follow Politico's coverage of the coronavirus in our Politico nightly newsletter and in Morning Money. Thanks for listening, and stay safe out there.